The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here for the second hour of the Outdoorsman Radio Show, and I'm joined this morning by...
me.
Miss Robin.
Good morning, everybody.
My lovely wife, Robin Ellis. Yes, indeed. Joining us this morning from Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Fishing and Boating Services, Joseph W. Love, Ph.D.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. As we call him here on the air, Dr. Love.
Yeah. That's my stage name.
That's your stage name, Dr. Love.
I mean, you were born with it.
What's that?
That's what makes me the money right there.
That's right, Dr. Love. Right.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Family Feud answer to me.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Sounds just like Thanksgiving dinner.
Uh-huh.
Thank you guys for having me on the show this morning. I appreciate it. It's going to be a good time, I think.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. No question about it, because we're going to talk about all those nasty fish. Well, you know, we're going to talk about, quote, good fish and bad fish.
Yeah.
But I think it's a matter of perspective, isn't it?
I think you're right. It is. And, you know, a lot of people have different opinions, and I've heard a lot of those opinions, and I think it's good to kind of discuss these issues to kind of learn where everyone's coming from, you know?
Exactly.
And there's been a lot of hype out there, a lot of misleading statements. And, you know, what we're interested in doing is just kind of learning the truth together with this, at least the snakeheads, you know, they're kind of new to the country. So we're just trying to push along and learn as much as we can right now, you know?
Well, I think Maryland is the epicenter of snakehead madness, and is it not?
It is, unfortunately and fortunately, depending on your opinion.
Right.
You know, they were first found in Virginia, on the Virginia side of the Potomac River, in the tidal basin.
Right.
But since then, you know, they've spread throughout the whole watershed, the tidal watershed anyway.
Right.
And Maryland, of course, you know, manages most of that.
Right.
So yes, you know, we are the epicenter, and for better or for worse, we're trying to work with other states like Pennsylvania and Delaware.
Right.
And Virginia, because you know, Pennsylvania is worried about the animal moving up.
Sure.
Past the dam, and Delaware's got a lot of water. Well, not a lot of water, but they've got a lot of ponds.
Sure.
People who fish out there, and we're just all trying to work together on kind of a straightforward, unified approach to dealing with this animal.
Got it. All right. Now, yeah. Joe, were you here for the Crofton Pond debacle?
Whew, no. I can take my hats off to the people who were, though.
Okay. Yeah, that's. I got it. That's where they were first discovered. Of course, they were spawning in the pond. And I don't think they realized how prolific these creatures are. After that, they were discovered in the Potomac, and Virginia and Maryland were involved. Now, right from the beginning, an article in the Washington Post talked about these animals. Back in early 2004-5, somewhere in there. Okay.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was working at the Big Box in Arundel Mills as their promotions guy. And I looked at this and I said, you know, we got an invasive species. It's one of a few here in Maryland that you know, we need to deal with. Let's focus on invasive species and do a reward for people who catch and kill snakeheads. And, you know, it got a lot of acclaim. It got a lot of national attention and so forth, but it focused on the Potomac. And then Marianne Livingood, I don't know if you know Marianne or not, she was working in D.C. at the time, and I can't remember who she worked for, but she organized with Steve Chaconis and a couple others the first snakehead fishing tournament. And it was sponsored by the big box, right out of D.C. Right out of downtown D.C.
Okay.
And we all went out on our boats and fished, and nobody caught one. We had a nice day of fishing, but it did draw attention to the fact that these animals were here. And then, we had guys catching, a fry, I guess, or fingerlings in nets and, you know, using all kinds of different gear to catch these fish. And we said up front it was, you know, recreational fishing gear. It would get you the reward. And got a call from a guy that says, "Hey, we got 80 of them. We want to bring them in for the reward." And I said, "Nah, how'd you catch them?" He said, "Nah, we got them in a net. We got pitchforks, dynamite." You know, I said, "We're not gonna reward you with that." And then at that point, the whole reward thing got blown up and ruined. So
yeah,
you know. So, but it did let some people know that these things were there and put them on the map, kind of. But let me ask you this question. I get it all the time. How many times a year do snakeheads breed? How many broods, how many hatches do they have a year?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we're still trying to learn the answer to that one. What we initially thought, what was originally published and what we saw is that they had like a major spawning period. They bred really in the spring, so really May, early June, and with a little light spawning in the fall, but so maybe two periods. But then over time, we began having reports from anglers and our own observations that we were seeing snakeheads on the nest between end of April, all the way through November and December. And that was somewhat unusual to us. And what we're thinking is that there may be more than two, periods. But what we, and from what I've read, it could be up to five down in Florida.
Wow.
But what we don't know and what we're trying to learn is whether a single female is capable of reproducing twice a year or if it's just, one fraction of females reproducing in May and June, and then another fraction.
I see.
June, July, August. So what we're doing now is taking a look at, their females' ovaries, taking a look at egg sizes. And, so far it looks like there are a couple of different egg sizes. So that tends to, within a single ovary. And so right now that supports maybe a couple times a year. But we're still learning these things, and that's just one of those aspects of their biology that we're still trying to work on.
Who's the world-renowned ichthyologist specializing in northern snakeheads from Southeast Asia?
We just had Zhao Lo come over from Asia. I believe he's from China, and he spoke at our snakehead symposium last year, and I don't know if we'd call him or the world would call him the world-renowned expert. That's kind of a lofty title.
I know. But, I'm just, you know.
Right. But he does. He's been studying snakehead. He's published a couple papers on the animal, and he's been studying the animal from that corner of the world. So, he's had some good things, some interesting things to say about the species. And last year, they presented some of his research on consumption rate of snakehead. Part of the world, the globe here, we're trying to fast become experts ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've got people like, you know, John Odenkirk from Virginia who's
working on the species. Yeah, I met John at the very beginning back in at that event in D.C. Yeah, no question.
And, you know, one thing people sometimes don't realize is Maryland's been working on this problem as long as Virginia has.
Right, exactly.
John's got a lot of press, but, you know, we've got biologists. I mean, I wasn't there in 2002, but we did have plenty of Maryland DNR biologists working on this issue back then. And
sure.
They haven't stopped.
Nope.
You know, so we're all trying on this end of the globe to become better experts in the animal. While still, you know, reaching out and thankful for things like conferences so that we can talk more with people from other states in this country, like Arkansas, where snakeheads seem to be spreading,
right,
as well as China, you know, where people, some people have been studying them for a long time.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, I had another question. Oh, how fast do they grow? They seem to be like phenomenal.
Oh boy.
As their growth rate is concerned.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, there's none in a location, and all of a sudden they're pulling them out 10, 15 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
How does that happen?
Yeah. They eat a lot of fish. You know, we initially had a risk assessment done by Walt Courtney, who was kind of an expert on snakeheads, and he came out of Florida, I believe. Back in 2004, they published that risk assessment on the whole family, and they talked a little bit about growth rates, and then and how fast they are, and what, you know, we did in this region is kind of study that.
Right.
So early reports, you know, were that the growth rates weren't altogether that fast, but later work by Fish and Wildlife Service kind of indicated that they're pretty substantial. So a young fish that's birthed in a year can grow up to 8-9 inches, and then you know, after that grow, you know, fairly rapidly, 2-3 inches a year. But there's just a lot of variation in that growth rate because, you know, it really depends on what the fish is eating.
Right.
So now we've got, you know, the world record that was caught out of Virginia, a little over 18 pounds. The biggest snakehead found in Maryland is 19.9 pounds. So we're talking about an animal that can reach a weight of up to nearly 20 pounds within 10 to 12 years.
Wow.
Which is pretty substantial for a a freshwater fish. You know, you don't see bass doing that.
Right.
So, at least around here. So,
they gotta survive being eaten first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely correct. And, you know, snakeheads, to get that size, you know, the young fish, within their first year, they're consuming other fishes, and as they grow, they, to 10, 12, 13 years of life, they consume fish throughout their days, and, you know, we're seeing all kinds of species in their stomach. It's not just fish. It's also crayfish. We're seeing amphibians like frogs. So they're eating a few different things as they get older, and all of that just helps put weight on them.
If you want to wipe them out, tell the watermen they're eating the crabs.
Well, we haven't seen that yet.
Oh, okay.
But that's why we pay attention to blue catfish.
Yeah, I know that. All right.
Yes, sir.
Hang on. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take a call from Odell about snakeheads in Baltimore for you. And this is going to get interesting, okay? All right. Let's talk about Clyde Sports Shop. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They're off just off Beltway exit number 9. If you're going crabbing, you need to stop by Clyde's first, because they've got everything. They've got the hand lines, of course. They've got the bait, the eel and the chicken necks. They've got the Pasadena crab traps, low profile, the topless crab traps all stacked up. If you want to make your own trot line, they've got the tarred line. They've got the Loctite number 5. They've got a pre-rigged snood trot line, 1,000 foot. They got 10-pound trot line weights and snood, all the accessories. the baskets, the lids, the accessories, the steamers, the seasoning, the nets. What else is there for crabbing, Robin? Gloves?
Mm-hmm. Crab measurers?
Are you with us, dear?
I'm here.
I think she was snoring over there, wasn't she?
I did not.
I know. Anyway, and everything for fishing as well, for any type of fish in Maryland. So why not stop by Clyde Sports Shop, see the whole selection, 410-242-6108. And don't forget that fishing report, 410-247-3464. Easy way to remember it, 24/7 fish.
And it's working.
And it's working. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners rated number one, carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner, truck gear, and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford, 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Hey, Chesapeake Outdoors, Kent Island's crabbing headquarters. They also have everything for fishing as well. And, by the way, the spring trolling baits are 40% off. The Bradley Smokers. We're going to wind up with a smoker, aren't we? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just say yes.
Yes, sir.
20% off. And if you'd like fish that's smoked and game that's fish smoked, I mean, the Bradley's a great one. Crab pots, crab traps, crab nets, ready-to-go trot lines, trot line components, crab bait, crab seasoning, and steamers, licenses, ramp permits, all at Chesapeake Outdoors, and crab measures as well. They have the new floating crab measure. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I bet you have. Yeah, manufactured right here in Maryland. The floating crab measure. Pretty cool. Anyway, Costa sunglasses, Yeti coolers, Bubba Blade knives, and if you want to dress and act like a waterman, they've got the Grundens clothing, the grain gear, the apparel, the boots. You know, if you want to go out there in all kinds of weather like watermen do and crab, you can.
Do they have the little white boots?
They have the extra tough fishing boots, too. The little white boots. Yeah, they have all that.
And I like those boots.
Yeah, well, I'll get you a pair. Where is this wonderful place, Chesapeake Outdoors, located? Route 50 East, exit 39B, Dominion Road, exit 39B, right off Route 50 on Kent Island, 410-604-2500. Don't forget to tell them you heard about them on the Outdoorsman Radio Show. You'll be glad you did.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
And now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Put me on a mountain, way back in the backwoods. Put me on a lake with a biggin on the line.
Snakehead.
Put me around a campfire.
Eating snakehead.
Cooking something I just cleaned.
Snakehead.
You do your thing, I'll do mine.
You do your thing and I'll do mine. Did that announcer say that moron Alan Ellis? Is that what he said? No?
It sounded like it to me.
Dr. Joe, what do you think?
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
I don't see anyone calling you a moron.
Oh, well.
Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah, you have met my wife. Let's talk to Odell in Baltimore, see what he has to say about snakeheads. Hold on a minute.
All right.
You want to get him up? Vern, go ahead. Hey, Vern. Odell, how are you?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Good.
That's down Southwest Park. It's off Patsco River there, right?
Yeah.
Right in Baltimore Island. And last Wednesday, it was like 5-6 schools, a bunch of baby snakeheads. I threw a cast in that after I get some L-wise for bait. And I caught a half a 5-gallon bucket full of baby snakeheads between 3 and 4 inches long.
Okay.
Fishing there anymore, you're not catching anything. Guys, you know, but those old guys go there and hang out in the morning and fish, and they ain't catching nothing. I'm using all kinds of bait.
Huh.
And when them schools of baby snakeheads come up there, usually have a big snakehead with them. And
yeah,
the ducks that have the ducklings, they're like walking the water, running to the land, like they're—I guess they're afraid they're going to eat them or something. I don't know.
Probably will. So.
You know, that's not the first time I've heard that. You know, certainly you got, you know, the parents guarding their babies. You got about a couple of parents guarding their babies for these fish. So you got to, you know, be a little careful because they're somewhat defensive. Those.
That's a good time to catch them, though, right?
Well, it's a tough time to catch them.
Okay.
They'll move around with them babies. It's like a big old school of fish just moving around. And the babies are just eating what they can, and the parents are moving with them. And they're more concerned about protecting them babies from things like bass or sunfish. And from what I understand and my own personal stories, they're tougher to strike, when you got that situation.
I see.
You know. But what we have seen is if someone's lucky enough to pull a parent off that nest, them young fish get eaten up by a lot of different things really quickly.
Really?
So we're talking about little mosquito fish. They like an inch long fish, right? Can go in and eat them juveniles sometimes, depending on the size of the juveniles. So, you know, getting those parents off the nest seem to be key in some cases, but, it is hard to do. It is hard to do.
3 or 4 inches. Guy working down Clyde's down there, and he said that's the first time he's seen that many. Then I took them out and killed them all.
Well, that's probably the best thing to do. So.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, they were like 3 or 4 inches, and they had little sharp teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
all right. Odell, well, thank you for doing your civic duty. We got to move along, okay?
Appreciate the phone call, sir.
Thank you, Odell. All right, Joe. So there you go. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. There's no stopping them. There's no stopping them, is there?
No, I don't. Well,
one
else. I try and tell people I don't give up hope, but I think for the Chesapeake Bay, I think they're here and they're moving. You know, they're spreading around pretty well on their own.
Yeah.
Some people have been a little. Playing a little Mother Nature there.
Yeah, I know. People are planting them in freshwater impoundment, which is just stupid.
Well, I just got our first report from a snakehead being caught at Loch Raven.
Oh, no.
Inside of the rest of, they've been caught in a couple of little isolated ponds around there. But an angler just caught one out of there. And I talked to the regional manager about that, and he doesn't believe that they would have gotten there on their own.
No.
So, you know, I guess that sometimes birds can move fish around, too. But we do know from Facebook posts that we've seen, National Resource Police have seen, that people have been wanting to start start their own sport.
Oh, yeah.
Because they want to catch them in their impoundment.
Same thing with blue cats. Same thing with flatheads. I get it. I don't get it, really, because people don't know how harmful they are. But, you know, that's certainly a self-centered interest, that's for sure.
There are a lot of great fish to catch in Maryland, and we really didn't need snakeheads. But now that they're here, you know, we are trying to encourage people to catch them and to harvest them, because if they don't, you know, the population is just going to grow. You know, in Asia, a lot of people eat snakehead. It's a food fish over there. You know, we need that to happen here.
Right.
Otherwise, that population in some areas is just going to grow, you know, big and have these effects on the ecosystem that we're trying to avoid.
Right.
So, you know.
I get it. Well, you know, we've talked about this a couple times. The name is snakehead. Who wants to go into a restaurant and order snakehead?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. You know, I mean, the name puts people off.
You haven't liked any of my names.
Well, I do like some of your names, but maybe if we have a contest, you might wind up being the winner. You never know.
You can win yourself another snakehead, or whatever we call it.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, you know, we've talked a couple times on the air about that. Not you and I, but listeners want to know. You know, maybe we should rename it something else so people can order it and not be worried about it. But that being said, you and I met down at Dorchester at the Harriet Tubman event, and there's a nice article in the Bay Journal about that. I picked up a copy the other day about that, and we won't beat that to death. But being there and seeing that habitat, every time it rains, those ditches become super highways for snakeheads.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that whole waterway down there is connected by drainage ditches. And they can certainly send a school of babies down those ditches to go to the next place, you know?
And boy, have they.
Yeah.
You know, we knew that once they were introduced on the eastern shore that, you know, with that low-level elevation and all the ditches, that they'd spread out pretty quick.
Yeah.
And sadly enough, that's what they've done. You hit the nail on the head. That's what they did in Blackwater.
Yep.
Perfect habitat for them.
Yep.
And they use that because as a focal point to spread to other areas,
sure,
like the Choptank River, like the Chester River, you know, like the Wicomico River.
Yep.
So, you know,
how'd they get to the Eastern Shore?
Well, what we know is that an individual introduced them to ponds in Delaware, and those fish, at least some of them, came from Philadelphia. And those fish were introduced into the Seaford area of Delaware as well as the northern part of Delaware. And what we think happened is that they basically spilled out, as they do, into the Nanticoke River, which is where they were first caught,
right,
on the eastern shore.
Has that individual been identified and charged?
Yes, he has been identified. Delaware is dealing with him, and, you know, a couple last correspondence I had on that issue, they were pursuing a case, but I don't really know where that stands right now. And sadly enough, the fine penalties are usually fairly,
right,
you know, low. Maryland, luckily, a few years ago, upped those penalties. But, you know, some people get away with like $100 fine, and then have the state and the, you know, the people of that state having to deal with this issue, and so it's a pretty expensive consequence, right? And
right.
Unfortunately, the person who commits the act walks away with like a very small penalty.
Exactly.
Relatively. So,
exactly.
You know,
you can destroy an entire ecosystem.
Yeah, and look, I admit, you know, people love fishing for snakeheads on Blackwater. We had that derby.
Yeah, sure they
did. Trying to promote that. You know, we want that to happen, but, you know, we need people to eat the fish when they catch it. And you already mentioned the name issue, so it's been a challenge to get them to do that. And then, you know, we also have people out there who are hooking snakehead after snakehead after snakehead, which is great if you want to go snakehead fishing, but, you know, what if you wanted to catch crappie?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, man, crappie fishery down there in Blackwater is great, or was, you know, same way with some bass fishing, too. So,
Right, and so what we're trying to do is provide a lot of different angling opportunities for our anglers in Maryland, people who come to Maryland from other states or other countries. And it just, it sometimes it becomes hard to do that if you have a population like snakeheads that grows really fast in an area where it does really well. And then suddenly I'm hearing reports of anglers catching them on Transquaking River like 50 to 100 in a day, and that's
right.
all they're catching.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So that's the problem that we're trying to address.
Exactly. You know? Hey, I want to talk, we got another call on snakeheads from JR up in Harford County. But speaking of Harford County, the upcoming Waterfront Festival in Havre de Grace. Now, where is that? Is that at the museum?
Yeah, so there's going to be, it's going to be at one, couple locations, Hutchins Park out there.
Okay.
And, yeah, and at the Maritime Museum, right, the lighthouse area.
Okay.
And we're going to have a booth there with, snakehead and a catfish.
Okay.
Probably in a cooler.
Okay.
We're going to talk about filleting the fish, how that's done.
Okay.
And, of course, we're going to have our big fish tank. So we're going to have some live sports.
Ooh.
So people can see the bass and the crappie and the sunfish.
Yeah.
That are also out in the water and are great fisheries, too.
Beautiful. August 24 and 25 in Havre de Grace. We'll have more information on that. Let's talk to J.R. in Harford County. J.R., good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Very interesting show as usual.
Thank you.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, sir. You know, with the bay, with the rockfish, okay, and I've lived around the Susquehanna and there most of my life in there, you know, transferring and the females going up laying their eggs up the close to the dam and so forth. I just wonder, do you think, sir, that the snakehead would affect as far as the rockfish is concerned?
Well, that's a great question, and I have to answer, you know, we're not yet sure. That's kind of a new area for us. We haven't really studied snakeheads in the upper bay because they haven't been up there that long. That said, we do know that snakeheads are at the base of the dam. We know that they've been passed by the fish lift in the Conowingo Reservoir. This year, they caught 81 of them in the fish lift, which is big relative to the past 2 years where they caught zero in the West fish lift. So we know that there are going to be more of them up there. Now, how that's going to affect other species like striped bass, we're just not sure yet. We're learning. You know, we know that they eat fish. You know, snakeheads are a piscivore. They eat a lot of fish. But hopefully they won't have much of an impact on stripers who, you know, they go up there, they spawn, they do their thing. But hopefully there's not going to be, you know, much of an interaction there. But all I can say is that we're going to continue to pay attention to that.
Right. Well, I appreciate that wholeheartedly because I often thought about it, you know, with these things being as aggressive as they are and, you know, seeing them in the Susquehanna and they're everywhere.
Yeah, they are. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Question.
I just wondered on that. Your answer to my question really, really good, and I sure appreciate it.
All right, JR. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate the call.
Thank you for the call.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right. Dr. Love.
Yes, sir.
Unless we get some more, there's Dale in Easton. We're going to talk about blue catfish in just a minute. I had my first blue catfish the other day. Robin tried a bite of it, and I really like it. But one of our buddies down there he got on the Marshy Hope Creek, and mm-hmm. I guess that's again another hot spot for that. But before we move to blue cats, let's talk to Dale in Easton, and I think you know this guy. Hey, Dale.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dale.
Robin. Good morning.
Good morning.
Joe, you. You missed a fun experience in the Crofton Pond. It was an interesting experience, trust me. So, reminded me of Fisteria, not quite the extent, but it was interesting. But one of the things that if you talk to the people mm-hmm. involved with that, Steve Early and Brian Richardson, so some of those guys, those mm-hmm. fish were that wasn't the only place snakeheads were. They were established before then, so. That was more of a PR thing than anything else, Joe.
Really?
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
It certainly did blow up that way, didn't it?
Yeah.
They were there. That was just a convenient spot that caught the press and everybody else. So it was, again, it was a lot like Fisteria. You weren't around for that, but that was.
I was.
That was an interesting experience. Alan will tell you. Rudy's got a big smile on his face listening.
No question.
My question is this: in terms of competition between blue catfish and snakeheads, is there any overlap in their habitat? In other words, are there areas where they're, I won't say coexisting, but they're found in the same locations? Because I would think there'd be a little bit of competition there, but seems to me, based on what I know about blue catfish, they're far more of a threat to our ecosystem than snakeheads are.
Well, So catfish, particularly the blue catfish, they tend to be more of a deep water species. So on the marshy hoe that Alan mentioned, you know, we're finding them, or we found them around, you know, the bridges. When we've been on the Potomac, we found them around docks and deeper areas. Snakeheads, you know, may move into those areas a lot like bass during the winter, but for, you know, that thermal refugia, but they'll move out. So they tend to be more of a shallow water shoreline species. So you can find them, or a marshy species like what we see at Blackwater, but you can find them periodically in similar habitats, but generally speaking, when we're out surveying, blue catfish are found in different locations than snakehead. So there may not be as much competition there. Snakeheads tend to compete more for space with the species like largemouth bass. We find them co-occurring in the same habitats a lot, but not so much for the blues. And yeah, blue catfish are a threat. I try not to play favorites like a parent with two kids, right? Their effects, both warrant concern, maybe in different areas. So blue catfish get really abundant, in some areas like Marshy Hope or like on the Potomac, and they're starting to spread and they get really big, right? The world state record out of Virginia was 140 pounds in Maryland, an 80-pound fish is our state record. So, you know, we're talking about a massive fish that's bigger than snakehead, with a population size that's bigger than snakehead populations. So, yeah, they're going to have a impact, you know, a sizable impact in the ecosystem. The question really is, you know, what is that impact? That's something we're trying to learn. But, you know, I tend not to play favorites because I think, you know, snakeheads do live in flight in different areas and blue catfish, and they all impact the ecosystem in different ways. So really our management strategy has been to try and lower the biomass of all of these invasive fishes and kind of prevent their impacts wherever they live. So,
yeah, I don't envy you in terms of managing these critters.
No.
It's a tough job.
No question.
Been there, done that. So,
yep.
Yeah.
I've been here for rockfish moratorium, hydrilla, fisteria, snakeheads, blue cats. Dale, you've been here through all that stuff too, you know. And but I've been on the air for most of that.
I don't envy you because again it's a never ending battle.
It is, that's right. So
Joe, I wish you well. Keep your head down.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep my head down. We're just trying to, you know, spread the good word here.
Yep.
You're doing a good job, Joe, but like I say, just keep your head down. Alan, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Dale, thanks, buddy.
Bye.
See you. Yep. So, anyway, Robin, you're not saying much.
Uh-uh.
Okay. All right. Good enough. Good enough.
Just entertained by all of this.
Yes, indeed. Good enough.
Why not?
I guess. All right. Joe, we got to take another break, and we'll come back. I want to give you a little more time here on talk about Blue Cats, so we'll take a break of just about a little bit early, but that's okay. We'll talk about Clyde's Sport Shop. You know, Clyde's is not only, you know, your fishing headquarters, and, of course, they've got the black salty shiners that people use for snakeheads and all the snakehead baits and stuff, but they also have a full line of Browning firearms. Let's not forget the Browning BPS and the BPS hunting and sporting pump action shotgun, the BPS, Browning Pump Shotgun, available in Mossy Oak Breakup Country. If you like pump shotgun, it comes in 4, 10, 20, 12, and 10-gauge models, and even a 12-gauge deer model if you like to go that route. Bottom shell ejection feet and feeding and top tank safety. Invector Plus Choke 2s come with the bird models as well. Now, if you like a nice rifle, I want to tell you about the X-Bolt Hell's Canyon Speed. They have three models of that: the Speed, the Long Range, and the Long Range Macmillan models, available in a number of different high calibers, 6.5 Creedmoor and a 7mm mag and all that. But these things come in a arid urban camouflage, a composite stock, a Cerakote finish, fluted sporter barrel, and a threaded muzzle brake, a detachable rotary magazine, a short throw bolt, and adjustable trigger, all on the X-Bolt Hell's Canyon. So, there's two for you to choose from. See the full line of Browning shotguns and rifles and handguns at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. Stop by, get your fishing license, find out about the upcoming hunting season. You can get the ammo to match. They do have gunsmithing and scope mounting services as well, all at Clyde's Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road, Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit 9, 410-242-6108. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners rated number 1, carry nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner, truck gear, and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford, 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
And now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
Red-headed stranger from Blue Rock, Montana, rode into town one day, and under his knees was a raging black stallion, walking behind was a bay. Red-headed stranger had eyes like thunder, and his lips, they were sad and tight. His little lost love lay asleep on the hillside, and his heart was heavy as night. Don't cross him, don't boss him, he's wild in his sorrow, he's riding, hiding his pain. Don't fight him, don't spite him, wait till tomorrow, maybe he'll ride on again.
A little Willie Nelson out there for our listeners.
I love Willie.
Red-headed stranger. It's a good song. Let's see. Yeah, you like that, Joe? Yeah, me too.
I do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the old country.
Indeed. All right, we want to talk a little bit about Blue Cats. I was in Bryan's Road yesterday, and if I recall, the state record Maryland cat was caught out of Mattawoman.
Yeah, I believe you're right. Out of the Potomac, yes, sir.
Yeah, and it was in a tank down at Arundel Mills for a while. I helped facilitate that move as well. I'm not bragging. It's just part of what my life. Got a call on Easter weekend. The guy caught it, and he brought it up there in his live well. And I had to make some emergency calls to Springfield and everything else. But it was fun. It was fun.
Wow.
Yeah, we kept it in quarantine for about 10 weeks down there in a tank and then put it in the big tank. But anyway.
Big fish.
Yeah, it was a big fish, 80-some pounds.
Yeah.
But that's where this came to light, the blue catfish, and tell me about the latest.
Yeah, so we've got some new things going on right now. You know, we talked a little bit about habitat and where they live, and you know about Marshy Hope kind of having that population growing, but it's not just Marshy Hope. It's other areas too that we're paying attention to. Blue catfish are kind of turning up in new areas like in the Upper Bay. So what we're doing is trying to understand what those impacts are, you know. Down on the Potomac River, I was talking with Mary Gross, who our regional manager there, and she's learned that the blue catfish are entering the shallows during certain times of the year. So they're not just always in deep water. They're going into shallows, and they're eating them yellow perch eggs.
Ooh, that's not good. That's not good.
That during the spring. No, it's not good. She's one of the first. They're one of the first to document that. You know, there's that. There's research coming out of Virginia indicating that the blue catfish, especially in the lower parts of the rivers, they're eating blue crabs and a lot of them. So, you know, that's not good either, especially knowing that blue catfish in Maryland are becoming more of a problem. So what we're doing, we're going to partner with USGS and fish and some other state agencies like Maryland Department of Ag, and the watermen and fish processing plants. And what we're trying to do is get more people to eat blue catfish, particularly the wild-caught catfish, because there are a lot of them out there, and we need to figure out a way of getting them out of the water. So we are doing research in places like the Tuckson River to learn more about how to find blue catfish and what their impacts potentially are. And we work in on the management front with some of our partners to try and get blue catfish put into put onto the dinner plate, basically. And that's a challenge too, because there's a lot of competition for catfish in this country. You know, we have all these farm ponds, all this aquaculture for catfish.
Yeah.
And now we need people to start eating these wild caught catfish. Otherwise, you know, we're going to end up with some problems. You know, James River, they talk about the problems down there with blue catfish.
Yep.
They try to maintain a trophy fishery, and it's tough.
Yeah.
It can be tough because they can get, you know, abundant quick, and they can stunt in size, apparently, run out of resources, cause problems with, little mussels, cause problems with white catfish,
yep,
which is our native catfish.
Yep.
So, you know, we're trying to avoid those problems here in Maryland, and I think our best foot forward right now is just to get people to eat them.
Real quick, was it the Mermaid's Kiss event? This is 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And one of the commercial wholesale fish suppliers was telling me that they had already established a market with catfish, blue catfish. And they were selling, they sold the first year, I think they sold 100,000 pounds. They were targeting 300,000 pounds and, you know, for their market. And I guess it's probably increased since then. But who do we have commercial fishing for blue catfish here in Maryland?
Well,
or do we?
Yeah, we do. We've got, you know, Billy Rice. We've got, Daniel Grinder,
yep,
on the Eastern Shore.
Yep.
I talked to Cornflower, I talked to Kaz.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Right. So we've got people pulling out blue catfish. Right now it's not very profitable though.
Right.
Some problems. It's like 15 cents, 20 cents, 30 cents a pound, which is not much, plus we have this new ruling in the USDA Farm Bill that's kind of shutting out some of our wholesalers from the blue catfish industry.
Oh, really? Okay.
The fish processing plants. Yeah, so we're dealing with a situation where we got maybe fewer fish processing plants taking on catfish, and then we've got this sluggish market where our watermen just aren't getting enough money to really pull out tons of cats.
Now that makes sense.
We've got some work to do.
Yeah.
Got some work to do to kind of grow that market, and that's why we're teaming up with Maryland Department of Ag. They've already got some initiatives to put blue catfish in the prisons in the state, and I think that's working out. What we'd like to do is see blue catfish end up in places like Cracker Barrel. So
what's wrong with that? That's great.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I think we have to build that market, you know. We have to get there, and that's what we're working on.
All right. Hey, Joe, we're out of time.
Ah, too much. All right.
And, well, and this is fun. I mean, this is really fun. We've got just in the last few minutes on email, we've got a handful of folks that are listening to say, you know, get this guy back. He knows his stuff, and we enjoy listening to him, and you know, all that stuff. So
I appreciate that.
High praise from our listeners is good. I mean, you get more compliments than I do, and I'm not fishing for compliments and saying I do a good job or anything like that. Listeners, Ellis at ellisoutdoors.com. But I would like to hear about our guest.
Just put that in. Well, y'all can reach me anytime if you got questions, through the department.
Yeah.
Feel free to reach out. We can, get those questions answered.
Sure.
For you.
And you've updated the invasive species page and all the snakehead information. It's all on the website. And,
new videos up. Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
So go there.
I got it. All right, buddy. Hey, thanks for the call. Come back soon.
I hope to. Thank you, guys. Hope you have a good morning, good weekend.
Thanks, Joe. You have a good one, too.
Bye-bye, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. There goes Joe. And there's the music, which means we're done, right? We get to head back to the Eastern Shore.
Yes, we do.
That sounds like a good thing to do.
I got a disclaimer real quick.
What's a disclaimer?
I would not usually be this sleepy, but it is hot as the dickens in here this morning. It's all
You're
thirsty.
Hot.
I'm burning up.
Yeah, well, you got a hooded sweatshirt on.
I do not.
You got long pants.
I do not.
And you probably have insulated underwear underneath.
No, I don't.